Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois, and I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Kai Kello is a respected writer and recent winner of the prestigious Griffin Poetry Prize, who is currently based in Montreal, Quebec. And Jason Sharp is a musician and composer, well regarded for his work in electronics and on bass saxophone, who is currently based on an island in British Columbia, though both once called Alberta, Canada, home. After first encountering one another in Montreal's multidisciplinary underground music and arts community some 20 years ago, which led to a few collaborations, Kello and Sharp now lead a fiery ensemble called Fear, whose self-titled debut album was released by Constellation Records on April 5th, 2024. To mark the occasion, Kai and Jason join me for a talk about our Alberta commonalities and the Edmonton Oilers, the origin of their social and musical relationship, writing one piece that has been divided into chunks for this dynamic album, and its concept and sound, what certain children think of the record, being attention, how they work together, writing more music, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters just like me to make a living. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf in Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 852 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Kai Kello and Jason Sharp from Fear, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
We are from another. Time fashion is formed by the god. Parts of us no longer. Parts of remember. Ways of being faded to wisps, to particles, to dust and drift. What's past is rising action, trajectory, and we are fuel. We propel into don't know. Choices made by choices, into consequence or ongoing conclusion. What will live and who will inherit all that's dead, but all that is energy.
Hi, Kai. How are you?
Good, Vish. It's nice to be here with you.
Oh, it's lovely to have you as well. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in my living room in Montreal, and I am also a... I was in Alberta at one point in my life as well.
Oh, yes, I'm in Edmonton. One point in your life. When was this exactly?
I was a lot younger. We lived for some years in Calgary. So.
Oh, nice. Where are you from originally?
BC, Vancouver.
Oh, you're just making your way east. That's your plan?
Yeah, and Jason's made his way back west, so...
That's right. Did you like your time in Alberta?
No comment.
Okay, fair enough. This is not meant to be an interrogation. I've been full-throated about my ambivalence myself. I like it, but also, I don't know if I like anywhere at the moment. You know, everywhere is kind of messed up.
Yeah, things have gotten kind of difficult in the world and expensive and, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a drag. Maybe we'll get into that as we talk about your record. We'll see. Jason, how are you?
I am good. Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. A longtime fan there, Jason. I gather you're in BC from what Kai was saying?
Yeah, I now live on Quadra Island, British Columbia, a little island off of Vancouver Island. But I did grow up in Edmonton and left Alberta some years ago.
What the heck? I didn't realize that we had a three-way Alberta connection. Wow. You grew up in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in Edmonton. Yeah. I left when I was 18 to Toronto, then Amsterdam, New York, Montreal, and now I'm back to British Columbia.
Wow.
Quadra Island.
Nice. How did you like growing up in Edmonton, if I might ask?
It was good, actually. I mean, you know, I made lifelong friends and I was involved in the Yardbird Suites, Little Birds Big Band, growing up playing music and playing saxophone, and it shaped me in many ways. Yeah. But I left when I was 18 and I haven't really been back since. But I too have no comment regarding Alberta, but I have a soft spot in my heart for Edmonton.
Edmonton is lovely. Edmonton is a nice, I feel somewhat insulated from some of the political horseshit living in Edmonton, but at the same time, we're all impacted by the provincial government's actions and all that sort of stuff. I feel like I'm compromising any ability I might have to get a grant at this point in the conversation from the from the government. But no, I'm sort of teasing. I think it's fine to be critical about where you live. And yeah, it's a bit of a haven. So yeah, anyway, sorry. I was not expecting this. And you're welcome back anytime, Jason. There's great food here. Great food. I will say that. I lived in a place in Ontario, a smaller town. Okay food, but this is great. Some great food. Have you heard that? Have you heard that from people that it's become a nice food place?
You know what? I have not heard that. I've got some friends who are amazing cooks themselves, and I tend to end up at their households when I'm crossing paths with them. But
yeah.
No, I there's much to explore at Edmonton that has grown in my absence for sure. So
yeah.
So I'll make it back one day.
Guy, I know you had no comment on your time in Calgary, but are you aware that there's a Calgary-Edmonton rivalry? I didn't know this and how harsh it was.
Oh yeah, yeah. When I was in elementary school, it was the Battle of Alberta years in hockey with, of course, the Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames. And that was the, I guess, that was one of the big cultural things that would happen.
Yeah.
I actually saw one of those games with Edmonton against Calgary. Gretzky was playing back
Holy
in the
Holy Lord, you got to see a Gretzky game. Wow. Yeah. You know, he was...
I got to see
He was my childhood hero, one of mine, and now I'm mortified just because he's gone. He's quite, you know, he's a right-leaning guy. I don't understand how the career leader in the NHL for assists could be against socialism. I don't get it. That's the whole deal. It's the whole deal. What are you doing? Why are you being conservative? It's very odd. Anyway, that's weird. Anyway, it's nice to have you guys both on the show. Thank you for this time. I want to get into this relationship before we get into the band, how you two know each other. Let's begin with Kai. Kai, how did you know Jason? How did you encounter him?
We met just in the Montreal arts community in the earlier 2000s, I think. And, you know, we became friends and gradually we tried collaboration on a number of occasions. And we slowly kind of started developing a vocabulary. And, you know, a lot of our early attempts at collaboration would be less like jamming out on something and more really discussing how we were going to approach things because we're both coming from very different artistic backgrounds, right? Mine was literature and literary performance, and Jason's was music, jazz music. So there would be a lot of time spent trying to discuss how we were going to approach making sound and what kind of structures we would use. And you know, Jason is a really thoughtful and sensitive musician. So he was really able to often find a conceptual framework for things that would allow us to proceed. So, you know, and then things just developed from there.
Yeah.
But those were the earlier steps.
In terms of your own musical interests, Kai, what were they? Because I'm struck by your delivery as a performer, as an artist on this record in particular. You are an award-winning poet. Is that wrong? That's accurate. Yes,
that's true. Yeah,
you've won one of the most prestigious Canadian poetry. It's international now, right?
International now.
Yeah. Congratulations on that. When was that again that you won that thing?
That was 2020.
Wow.
It was 2020. It was 2020.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
But back to my question: did you have Jason, you describe as being in the realm of jazz. Do you have musical leanings, particular influences, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I listen to all kinds of music at this point. Like, my listening is pretty broad. But if we're talking about sort of childhood influences and formative influences, then, you know, in my house, what was playing would have been, growing up in Alberta, you hear a lot of classic rock, a lot of country music as well. And it's funny because you take influence from your environment, right? So whether you like certain forms of music or not, or whether it's what you would choose to listen to, it still kind of shapes your ear in a way because you're accustomed to hearing it. So that is definitely there. But in my house specifically, I mean, my mom would love soul music, like old stuff, Roberta Flack, Aretha Franklin, gospel, Mahalia Jackson. Like around December 15th, the Mahalia Jackson would come on, right? And then it would be playing for a solid 2 weeks after that. But then coming from partly a Caribbean background, there would be a lot of reggae music from the 70s. So Jimmy Cliff, Peter Tosh, Third World, of course, the Wailers. B.B. King. Yeah, those were some of my really formative musical influences. I had an uncle who listened to a lot of Love, Miles Davis and Mingus, too. Hmm. So there was some jazz in the mix there. But yeah, reggae and soul music were kind of my early musical touchstones.
I see. You mentioned that Mahalia Jackson would come on December 15th, which is my birthday. So I wonder, was your mother playing the Mahalia Jackson to celebrate the Christmas season or my birthday?
I don't know when you got to, Edmonton. I think if it was around that area, it was definitely your birthday.
Okay, that's very sweet of your mother to acknowledge my birthday in such a way. That's really lovely.
She's a considerate woman.
I feel badly that I didn't know this until now. I feel I got to send her a Christmas card this year, or you. I don't know. We'll see.
Anyway, I'll let her know.
That's lovely. Before we move on from your earliest musical influences, I wonder if you can talk about how either those or anything more recent might have inspired your own and current vocal delivery, if you will, your approach to reciting your words, singing, you know, sure. my son might say rapping almost. Right. Can you talk about any more recent things that might inform what you're doing now?
Sure. I mean, in terms of really recent stuff that I might think of as being in a similar category, I would say some records by Anthony Joseph, also the Irreversible Entanglements stuff, some work by Saul Williams. I think more broadly, I would say a lot of classic dub poetry, Linton Kwesi Johnson, Jean Binta Breeze, Mikey Smith, Oku Anura. So classic Jamaican dub and UK dub as well. And then there's a long history of jazz poetry. So some stuff with Amiri Baraka. There's a record where Quincy Troupe and Hamit Bluyit play together on a couple of tracks. And then some of the beatnik style of poetry delivery with it's kind of declamatory. Yeah. But when I think of my own kind of delivery, I've always tried to reside within the register of speech, even if it's shouting or whispering, but speech being the main sort of vehicle for delivery, even if it might move towards something metered at times or even something tonal, but it's supposed to remain within the realm of speech. So it has a speech-like quality and it doesn't necessarily move into singing or rapping. And one of the things that I've always thought, having grown up, you know, mixed race Caribbean guy on the prairies, one of the things that I've always wanted was to articulate things in my own voice, right? With my own accent. Because when we were a kid, we had a lot of family in New York. So we'd go to Brooklyn, Queens. And like I mentioned in another interview, I grew up kind of smack in the middle of the hip hop generation, right? That's my demographic. And I never wanted to put myself in a position where I sounded like I was trying to appropriate an accent that wasn't mine in order to sound authentic in a particular genre, right? So my aim was always to really hone in on and focus on my own personalized delivery and accent, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. As you're speaking, it occurs to me that even I maybe myopically think of poetry as a written medium. I don't necessarily consider the recitation part of it as much as, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this. I think, I don't know if that's something you've contemplated or even, I'm sure you have encountered this where people are like, oh, you're a poet, so you write. And don't really think about the second part of that, which is the recitation, the delivery, the performance. Is that a common misconception or a common neglect, I suppose, of your art form?
No. I mean, there's long been a tension. I don't know if it's really the same as it was maybe 25 years ago between the poets of the page and poets of the stage. So poets who choose to perform and poets who prioritize writing.
Right. I find myself... There can be two kinds. Yeah.
I've known poets who compose exclusively in their heads for recitation. So they don't write anything down. But I'm kind of in the middle. So I do both.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I see. Okay. I appreciate that. You know, who does that? Jay-Z apparently never writes anything down. Only he freestyle. He comes up with stuff and apparently never has written a lyric down.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Something. He's good. He's pretty good, that Jay-Z. I think he's going to. Jason. Similar kinds of questions. I don't know if what Kai said checks out for you. How did you encounter him? Here's a question, maybe a way of reframing it. Had you heard of Kai before you actually encountered him from, you know, being active in your community? Can you speak to that?
No, I had not heard of Kai before encountering him. I encountered him on the stage, I believe. As Kai mentioned, there was an arts collective by the name of Community, which was a platform where various different MCs and poets and would take the stage to a backing band that would improvise the music around their delivery. And I met Kai within that organization, and I met that organization when I first landed in Montreal, and they were kind enough to give me a spot on the stage and sit in on baritone saxophone and come up with little horn stabs between verses, you know. It was actually a really wonderful introduction to the city and a wonderful introduction to the diversity of art practices that exist there, certainly out of my normal scope. And on that platform, I met Kai. And Kai really stood out to me anyhow, because as he just mentioned, he wasn't delivering words in a normal rapping way or sung way. It was spoken, but without a typical meter of a spoken word delivery. And he was using phonetics in a rhythmical way that was very musical. And really, to me, could have been one of the musical elements of the ensemble of the band. And so that's what struck me right away, without even getting into the content of what he was saying. It was just literally the phonetic musical building blocks of which he was constructing his delivery. And so crossing paths there, I did reach out to Kai and said that we should try to work together in some capacity. And from there, like Kai mentioned, we developed a language and started developing pieces that had content around it, and gave me an opportunity to frame the content, but also incorporate his way of delivery as a equal musical partner and things. And so we, over the many years, we've developed different pieces and staged those pieces and for different contexts. But essentially, you know, we began to develop a unique vocabulary together that evolved over years.
If I recall correctly, Kai suggested you this community thing that you describe occurred in the early 2000s. Did I get that right?
That would have been about right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I came to Montreal 20 years ago or so. Right. Or my gosh. So, yeah, I was just, I first landed in Montreal to finish my music degree from University of Toronto. I was lacking some electives. So I enrolled in McGill and, oddly did a very brief minor in South African history, which is strange. Coming from Edmonton, Alberta, I don't know what the historical studies I found really interesting, and a departure from my intense musical studies at University of Toronto. And so
how did you land on South African history studies?
I took a couple survey courses, and I think it just essentially, as I kind of narrowed in on a historical discussions around South Africa, it just spoke to me in terms of the volatile history of the country and the incredible transformation of that area and key political figures and activists. And it was just an amazing, we had gotten into some pretty incredible discussions, within the classroom. And, I felt like it was a compelling time or a compelling subject to dedicate my 1 year at McGill with.
Yeah, no,
but that was a very long time ago. Like I've never visited South Africa, and yeah, as I said, it could be really refreshing just to take a left step out of what you've been focusing on dive into something else.
No, that's fascinating. That's fascinating to hear. Okay. So you first were drawn to the way Kai phrased things, the rhythmic aspect of what he was reciting. You alluded to the fact that actually initially was your draw, the lure rather, more than the content. When you began to dial into the content, how would you characterize what you were hearing? How would you characterize Kai's voice at that point when that started to register? Oh, he's actually saying things that are quite compelling. And I hope that will lead us into what's going on in this album, because from what I gather, you would collaborate primarily live, kind of in fits and starts, like, you know, sporadically, I suppose is a better way of putting it. Is that right? First of all, do I have that right?
Yeah. I mean, we rarely, as Kai had said, got together in a completely improvisational kind of way. And because Kai's words were constructed in such a way, often stemming from like the written page, it wasn't a situation where we would, as he said, jam. So basically we would get together and with the intent on rehearsing or putting something together and essentially just go for coffee and talk in great detail. And in those discussions, talk about how to frame a musical evolution and an interplay to create a narrative to emphasize and strengthen the content that we were exploring. And that's how like very constructed pieces would evolve over time, but the nature of like of the content of each of those individual pieces would change from performance opportunity to performance opportunity.
Performance opportunities, right? Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Had you been in a studio together before this project?
Yeah, we did a little commission thing for Concordia University called Small Stones, where it was a very compressed studio experience where Kai brought in the words and Kai brought in a sense of how he wanted to deliver those words. And I very much on the spot used the studio environment as the musical instrument, essentially. And so we did a lot of quick decisions in multi-tracking and creating structures and basically, you know, applied what we've been the way that we work into a studio environment over a 2-day period. And it was funny because the people that was at Break Glass Studio and the people that were working there, I think were kind of amazed at how quickly Kai and I worked together. And I was reminded we hadn't really done a lot of documentation of our work together. Yeah, it all was, you know, around different festivals and different invites and performance opportunities, as you said. And when you get into the studio environment and you create that document, it was a nice kind of reflection of our efficiency in collaboration.
Right. Kai, you know, when musicians get together, any one instrumentalist can sort of initiate what ends up being a piece, a song. And I'm just listening to Jason describe your vocal approach and the rhythmic quality to it. Beyond your voice, are you skilled in any particular musical instrument? Do you have any kind of musical background?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I played the violin and trumpet, and you know, I was reading music, and I didn't really enjoy playing either instrument because I didn't hear either one reflected on an Aerosmith record or an AC/DC record at 11. So, and I would say that since those early kind of formative years, much of my musical discipline has just come from exposure and experience in the moment, right? So I'm not a schooled or trained musician in the way that Jason is. And there's certain musical things that I don't perceive. So I'm very grateful for Jason's musical solidity, his good timekeeping and his pitch.
You're coming in with, well, Jason describes you coming in with written down words and ideas. Are you improvising a lot in these jam sessions and what became this record? Is there a lot of improvisation?
You know, well, I can talk about two things. One, during the composition process and one during the performance process. Yeah. So in composition, sometimes Jason will ask me for something really specific that fits maybe a rhythmic approach. And in the moment, I'll have to come up with a phrase for him, you know, where the syllable count has to match the meter. And then he might ask me for another one and another one. So I may have to come up with several phrases in the moment. So there is definitely an element of sort of immediate kind of first thought is best thought construction in the composition process. And those things get sort of codified really quickly. So they're improvised in the composition process and then they become sort of part of the structure, right? Mm. And they don't change. But in performance, with a piece like the one we recorded, you know, there are narrow corridors for improvisation because the piece has a really carefully determined movement and direction. And there's not really, you know, there are some sections where you'd think that they could be sort of stretched out or you can stay in the section for a while, maybe sections that are more rhythmic or more driving in a certain way.
Yeah.
But, you know, we always have to be very careful to be looking ahead and tailoring our improvisations to what's coming ahead. So there is improvisation, but it's really contained and contextualized.
I see. Jason, do you initiate some of the musical ideas then, or is it a collaboration? Like, I'm sorry, how can I explain this? But no, I think that's my question. In terms of actually making music in this configuration, is it an equal billing in terms of someone coming in with a melodic idea, or is the music part of it something that you would initiate in this collaboration?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that I'm initiating all the musical aspects of this project and our collaborations in general. And like Kai just mentioned and I alluded to earlier, I'll often ask Kai a very, very specific things to fit within the container of the musical world that I'm building around this, mm-hmm. you know, so that could be, I need slow delivery of more vowel sounds, to create a round quality that then the musical backdrop will be expansive in this way. And, or I will need more, I need 8-figure of consonant sounds that is going to be repeated at increasing speeds with improvisation in between, or I need gibberish that's going to, you know, crescendo to this moment. And then on the resolution, have a very clear delivery that is, in a monotone kind of quality to it. So it's very mapped out, and it's very, I'm often asking Kai, you know, to jump over these hurdles and do these vocal gymnastics, really, that I know that he can very uniquely do. And that's where this collaboration runs deep, because this is all written and conceived of around an intimate knowledge of Kai's abilities. Yeah. And in this particular project, we're so fortunate to invite Tanya Evanson into this project as a secondary poet, because I think the list is very, very small of people that can fit into this world and be a counterpart to Kai's vocal delivery. So in terms of like the composition and bringing the musical ideas forth and writing, it's, I would say I'm bringing all those musical ideas together and creating the container for it, but it's very much exclusively, you know, inspired by the uniqueness of Kai's abilities as a poet.
You suggested that fear is a world, it's a container. Can we just home in on that for a moment and elaborate upon how you would characterize this world exactly? Because as I listen to it, it feels very much music of the present, but also the future, obviously drawing from the past. What am I talking about? That's what everything is. But I was trying to so I'll be honest with you guys. As I sometimes talk about on the show, I play music for my family. I mean, whether they like it or not, I'm like, Papa's got to prepare. So while I'm making dinner, we're going to listen to some music. And often they,
oh my God,
often they love it though. Often they love it. But this morning, I was playing Fear in the car as I was driving my son and his friend to school, and I could tell they were challenged by it. I'm just going to be diplomatic and tell you guys, they seem challenged by what it was. What is this? What's going on? And by the way, my son is just fully into Kendrick Lamar mode right now. So if it doesn't have a beat, solid beat, he's like, what is this? What's going on? Anyway, some of it, and I want to get in, I guess where I'm leading us is in the intent, the content, what you're talking about, Kai. But I do want to go back to what I was saying there. Jason, you suggest it's a world. Very few people could really fit in it. That's what you said. I'm reciting what you said back to you. I don't think I'm making this up. What does that mean? What is this world, and why might it be a challenge for other people to fit into it?
Okay, well, I'd love for Kai to jump on this afterwards and talk about the content of the piece and the world that it is creating. My reference to the world that I'm speaking to is the world that the performers inhabit. So my comment was that, yeah, that this music and this universe that we are occupying and animating is uniquely written for the individuals within this ensemble. The fact that I'm asking certain things of the violinists, I'm asking certain things of the drummers, I'm asking certain things of the pedal steel. I mean, you wouldn't even know that's a pedal steel half the time. And because I have, you know, an intimate knowledge and admiration for my friend Joe Grass, who can create these spaces. So my comment is that the ensemble is conceived around, you know, the unique attributes of these people, and those people coming together can create a musical world that is uniquely representative of their individual talents.
Just in terms of sort of, I guess, mutual friends, I mean, you've got Steph and Jesse Zubat, like these top tier people. And it seems like the work demands top tier people. I'll say that.
It does. It really does, you know. And I've been so fortunate to have collaborated on many different occasions with everybody in this, within this ensemble in very different contexts. And so it was really a, it was a joy to bring, Jesse and Josh, from the West Coast out here. Well, we recorded in Montreal. Yeah. And Steph and Tommy is those two drummers and, you know, and Joe and Kai and Tanya, and then Kevin Lowe, who you might not be aware of, who did the, all the artwork, but he's also, a visual performer of the typography, in the live performances, within the ensemble. So yeah, so it's kind of an amazing opportunity to be able to bring these dear collaborators, together, for this like unique representation in the, of this work.
Yeah. I can't believe you invoked Kevin Lowe. How many Edmonton Oilers references are we going to have on this episode? It's unbelievable. different Kevin Lowe.
You'd like that one.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. I interrupt this episode of my own show for a brief thank you for hearing my call to support me and my work on Patreon. We have seen a lot of growth in Patreon support over the last little while, which is amazing, because that's my primary source of income these days, and I love doing this job that I invented for myself a whole lot. Creative Control is a listener-supported podcast. Do podcasters receive any streaming royalties from podcast platforms? No, not any. Does podcast advertising pay the bills? Not for a show at this scale, no. Do all podcasters get paid by companies for their work like some celebrities do? No. No, most of us do not. We do this work to support our communities and because we love it. So what's the most reliable source of income for podcasters like me? Crowdfunding platforms like Patreon. So if you love Creative Control with Vish Khanna and want to see it continue, please see the notes in this episode. Click on the link that takes you to my Patreon and its different donation tiers with various incentives and benefits, and support me and my work today. Thank you again so much.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now, Kai, I want to get to you here now because we're getting into the lyrical intent, I suppose, and maybe what's inspired it. I have a couple of questions in this regard. I want to follow up on something that Jason suggested about asking you to stretch out consonants, syllables, you know, I need you to do this or that. I wonder if that suggestion and that musical direction influences what you are actually going to talk about, and if you can cite any examples of that. And then within that, yeah, in a general sense, it sounds like you're a big part of the world creation going on in Fear. And I alluded to the fact that temporarily, I'm not sure where this is taking place. So that's my own maybe baggage that I'm bringing to this. Can you talk about your intent in terms of what you want to convey in this project? And again, how Jason's musical direction might influence or inspire what you do as a vocalist?
Yeah, I can say that the best request I've ever gotten from Jason was these short bursts of gibberish that sound diabolical, like a record spinning backward. So that was during the Small Stones recording.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I
and he delivered.
Know, yeah, thank you. Yeah, working with Jason is, I really have to think about the content of what I'm going to write, because I feel like it has to support and work with, or give Jason enough to work with musically, right? And Jason, you know, those, the baritone and bass saxophones have really grave and imposing and beautiful sounds, but they can be grave and imposing. And there's such a range to those instruments. They're very, they have a big presence, to say the least, right? And Jason's, sometimes his musical sensibility really is bold. And you can see that just from some of the choices that are made on the record. It's very kind of maximal and sprawling and epic sometimes. And I often feel challenged in a good way to come up with material that will allow Jason that kind of latitude to really explore the kind of scope of his musical sensibilities and the range of sounds that not only he can produce, but that he might want to hear in a composition, right? At the same time, I do come from a literary background where I think often about the intersections between literary form and also what's going on in the world. So, you know, social implications.
Yeah.
And a lot of this text was rewritten and revised during the pandemic. And a lot of the text isn't actually mine, in that I didn't just kind of pluck it out of thin air. I didn't just sort of kind of like take the social temperature and then sit down and write something to express my feelings. But a lot of it comes from the language of the moment. So language drawn from news broadcasts and lectures by British philosophers and on different topics that came up during the pandemic, essays on or discussions of climate change. You know, so it's not necessarily that phrases, intact phrases were, I guess, plucked from somebody else's work, but the sense of the language and the sense of where it was going and what I was saying was drawn from those varied sources.
Yeah.
And I guess the overall direction that the text was taking was thinking about how we think about the future and how we think about our futures and access to the idea of a future. And what does that look like given the challenges of climate change and pandemic and inflation and things like that?
I mean, that comes through in the lyrics, the poetry on this. Sorry, is it wrong to call them lyrics? I just realized I might be misspeaking.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny tension that I think about often, because I have tried to write lyrics in the past, right? Yeah. And it always kind of swerves in a slightly different direction. So it never really becomes lyrics. And I always think of lyrics also, maybe this may be a mistaken association, but I always think of lyrics as being sung, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so,
do you not consider what you're doing singing? This is attention. You made a record. It's, yes, on a record label.
Yeah.
They make music.
Mm-hmm.
You're a poet. Do you consider yourself a singer?
No, I consider myself attention in the record and in the process.
Personified tension. I've not, yeah, had a personified tension guest on the show before. That's very fascinating.
There you go. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. There are a lot of tensions surrounding that. And I would,
yeah, yeah.
I guess I have hesitated before identifying as a vocalist. So I always call myself a poet, performing poet.
I'm making jokes, but I want to make sure I'm identifying you properly as well, in terms of your designation here,
sure,
because there is a tension. I will say that one of the things I pick up on from your record, or what it's got me thinking about, is, yeah, the pandemic, among the other things, I feel like the pandemic brought to light our relationship to dealing with climate change. And you talk about the future. And I feel like within the subtext of conversations about life right now is like, who deserves a future? And that's really fucked up. Like, the fact that one of the things that for me that came to light during the pandemic, this pandemic, is that humanity for some is a more esoteric term than I realized. I thought we all understood that we should all treat each other well. I mean, sorry, I'm not naive. I just am shocked at the brazenness of people in power, in particular, suggesting that some human lives are expendable and disposable. And what we've discovered, I think, is no, all of our lives to some are expendable. And, you know, you're talking about temperature changes. And I think on the record, I mean, like you're talking about a thing that's been staring us in the face forever and we've ignored it and it's getting worse and worse. I'm talking about climate change. Then you got viruses. As we're speaking, there's more of them surfacing. And I don't think anyone's going to do anything about it. I think we're kind of on our own. I'm sorry. I went on a bit of a rant and a ramble. Is anything I'm saying resonating with you in terms of what might have inspired your writing on this record, Kai?
Yes. I guess what the pandemic kind of brought into foot. Well, the pandemic really made me think about this closely, and it came out on this record, was that we all have varying degrees of access to the idea of a future. Like the scope of a future that we can consider for ourselves differs from person to person and country to country, community to community, group to group. And that has always been the case, right? Some people's idea of the future they may have access to is a lot more truncated and limited than other people's idea, right? But I think that during that pandemic moment, that sense of limitation hovered a lot more clearly in a lot of our sight lines, right? And it brought along with it a sense of uncertainty and a sense of dread and a sense of tension that I think unfamiliar to a lot of people. And, you know, I think that that's kind of where the writing worked well with Jason's compositional and musical sensibilities, because we have used the word tension here. And that is a word that Jason repeats when he's thinking and talking about music, mm-hmm. that in certain sections, we want to maintain certain kinds of tension and we don't want it to dissipate. And when he's guiding or conducting the ensemble live on stage, I think that's also a central focus of his, is, you know, maintaining and holding tension in certain moments.
Yeah. Jason, I want to ask you, I started to ask you this a while ago and then I lost my train of thought. I apologize. But in terms of what Kai maybe tends to write about and recite, does that influence you compositionally? Because I will say, and I hope this isn't the wrong term to use, I find that the record is quite theatrical in some ways, and that gives it attention as well. Attention is the word of the day. If this was Pee-wee's Playhouse, we'd all be screaming. can you talk a little bit about what your perspective is on what Kai tends to write about and how in your collaboration it may have influenced you compositionally as a musician?
Well, I think Kai tends to write about all sorts of things. Yeah. If you read his books, they're entirely different veins and exploring different thematic material altogether. I've been really fortunate in those conversations that we've had that Kai has taken the time to write things uniquely for our collaborations. And I do think that Kai's material that he tends to write in our collaborations is probably inspired, as he said, by my musical sensibilities that I'm trying to, you know, to bring to the stage and to the project itself. So I think that in terms of what he's writing and how it's influencing me and my decisions, it's kind of a feedback loop in that,
I see.
You know, he's creating these pieces specifically for this type of collaboration. But I do encourage listeners to explore Kai's written work and the many different avenues that he explores through the pages as well. But
yeah.
I think I'm in such a fortunate position to have a collaborator such as Kai that I can ask a Griffin Poetry Prize winner to write pieces to help me, you know, explore my musical ideas. And it's a fortunate place to be to be able to turn to him and say, I need to something that creates this musical shape. And then I get back this material with this amazing content.
Yeah.
I never really bring ideas of specifically what the content should be. I'm asking him to fulfill a musical role.
Yeah.
But Kai is absolutely free to write on what he wants to write about. And then as I learn about what he's writing, then that gives me direction for what kind of music will come next and how that will develop. And then he writes more material around the way that the music is being advanced. And then we get into that creative feedback loop where we've created a new piece. So it's two parts in that way.
I invoked theatricality somewhat gingerly. What's your relationship with that term? Do you feel like this music and this album in particular has that sort of bent?
I mean, that term makes me cringe a little bit.
No, I know. I brought it
if
up.
If I want to be entirely
listen,
if I want to be entirely
I try
honest,
to say, I try to say it carefully, but I it can connote different things to different people. But you know what, Kai? Do you know where I'm coming from with that at all in terms of the performative aspect of the, rather the performance aspect of what you're doing?
I would say that there are moments where I can detect almost something that would come out of a movie soundtrack, right?
That's what I'm saying.
In the music.
Yeah, that's
right?
What I'm getting
so,
at.
So I would say cinematic.
No, I'm going with theatrical. I don't think cinematic does it. I feel like we can have a debate about this. Like, I agree. Like,
yeah, no.
I do fundamentally agree. There's a cinematic quality to this. But I would say theatrical because to me, it doesn't mean, hey, we're doing a play. It means...
I have to clarify. My cringiness comes from, I have such a strong distaste for musical theater. I don't know what it is, but the overpronunciation of things and the over animation of things.
Yes.
It terrifies me.
I'm the same. I'm absolutely the same. I don't mean it in a disparaging sense. I just mean theatricality to me means that something's happening and then something else is happening all of a sudden as well. Like it's a little jarring. I'm using the wrong terms here, but like it is a compelling ride. It's not just one thing. All of a sudden something's happening. And you're like, whoa, I didn't want to use melodramatic or dramatic. I don't think that's right either. But there's something to the pacing and the arrangements and the structure here that makes me, the first time I heard this record, it's like, whoa, what the hell is going on? And that's what I kind of, sorry, maybe it's just the wrong term to use, theatrical. But
No, let me expand on it. I mean, I think that for one, in terms of the pacing and to speak to a theatrical aspect of things, this album was written as one piece.
Yeah.
It was broken up into seven parts in order to create access points for a listener. Mm-hmm. But it was developed for the stage as one single piece to be listened to from beginning to end without interruption.
Yeah.
And each of those
I think though what you're saying is it was developed for the stage. It was written initially as a performance.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I think we're all saying the same stuff.
And it was, and so in that sense, you're right, Vish and Jason. Yeah. I mean, the early articulations of it were strictly for performance.
Yeah.
So when we took this into the recording studio, we had to adapt it to being purely an audio experience.
There you go.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
No. That's exactly what I was trying
to
get to. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. We're on the same page for sure. Because
I think we're on the same stage, frankly, if I may.
The page is made to the stage. And yeah, so, you know, in that context, you know, experiencing something, you know, as one stage thing and then having a narrative that can take us through different emotions and different storytelling throughout that 45 minute journey, it creates cinematic moments. It may create, you know, more animated moments for sure, but it's something that, you know, was initially meant to be digested as kind of one long arcing narrative.
Yeah. I think Tanya's involvement as well creates, again, I don't mean to make anyone cringe, but it does suggest almost characters, like different voices suggest different characters. I would say that's true of a band writing a song. Sometimes, depending on the band, someone will start singing and then someone else will sing a bridge and you're like, oh, this is like the story is being told by different characters on some level. Dialing into that, Kai, we've talked about your poetic contributions. Did Tanya write her own stuff?
No. So I wrote the text for two voices.
Okay.
And Tanya, as Jason mentioned, just has really skilled poet in terms of the performance side of things. Also her writing and just poet and novelist and translator as well.
Yeah.
But her vocal delivery is fantastic. She's amazing to work with, and she can sound fantastic at really high volumes and intensities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also very open to a kind of collaboration where the direction is coming from elsewhere, right? Often in the poetry world, the poet is the one, is the only voice speaking, and is speaking all the time,
yeah,
and is always the lead. And so to work in this context, it really requires a different frame of thought to approach it, right? Because you do have to receive direction, but also you have to not always be in the foreground. So there are a lot of moments where the vocals kind of fade into a supporting role.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And working with Tanya is interesting because you're forced to write for two voices. And in that sense, there's a lot of pressure because you want the other person who is also speaking to be able to feel comfortable saying what you've written. Right. And I think that that goes for writing for Jason and for other band members as well, because what is said is associated with them. But with Tanya, it's more intimate because the words are literally being embodied by her.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
On a number of occasions, just revising the text, it did require a lot of thought, thinking about Tanya and her own sensibilities and her own position in the world and her own aesthetics and her degree of comfort with different elements in the text.
You both sound like you're directing a staged performance, and more than a musical one. So I just find this project very compelling. Jason, from your reckoning, is Fear a set band, or to follow up on what I was saying earlier, or trying to say, troupe? Do you feel like this is a set configuration on some level, or is it malleable? Will it change, do you imagine, as you potentially pursue further work together with Kai?
I think basically Fear is a fully realized orchestration of Kai and I's duo efforts. And this particular project, it started in a smaller configuration of a single drummer, and actually even earlier, it was Tanya and Kai and myself and Kevin, and then the addition of Steph Schneider and Joe Grass, and then the expansion of a secondary drummer, Tommy, and then Josh and Jesse Zubot. But it all kind of, you know, expanded to that orchestration stemming from just a duo.
Yeah.
And I think now that we've realized the sonic capabilities of Fear in this particular orchestration, I think Fear, you know, this is the ensemble. This music is uniquely orchestrated for these people. And it would, I hope to be able to have the opportunity to go through that creative process to, you know, amass these amazing talents again.
Oh, great.
Exactly as they are. As Fear, I think Kai and I will continue to develop pieces as a duo, and it will probably start from that duo perspective and work its way into a fully orchestrated version of another ensemble piece for Fear.
Nice. Well, that sounds aspirational at the moment, so that's cool. I mean, I assume on some level you're like, well, we made this record. Let's see. I mean, do you care much about how it's received per se?
Of course. I mean, you know, there's an enormous amount of work that goes into developing a record. You know, anybody that has put anything out into the world, you know, can attest to that. And of course, when you do that, you know, you want it to find listeners, that it resonates with for sure. And that, you know, feedback that helps propel projects and helps propel a kind of a creative spirit to keep, you know, putting things out into the world. And it's, I think it's really important to know that what you're doing is landing with some certain people. I mean, of course, you know, this is not the music to play as you're driving with your kids in the car. This is.
Well, I mean, I'll just say.
I have a 2-year-old girl and I wouldn't do it.
I will say, for what it's worth, and I'm not bragging or nothing, but you can imagine, given what I do, I encounter lots of different kinds of music, and I don't intentionally play it all for them, but they will hear it because it's playing in my office, or it's playing on the record player, or it's
right.
Like I say, I'll sometimes zap it to one of the speakers while I'm cooking or whatever. So they hear it and they will opine. They'll say, and some of it they fall in love with. Absolutely. But yeah, I hope I didn't come across as insulting anyway. I'm just saying.
I have a funny anecdote on that is, and I commend you as a parent to, that's amazing. And as I just said, I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I was editing, one of the videos that corresponded to one of the track releases. And my 2-year-old came over and said, "Dada, is that your music?" And I said, "Yeah, it's my music." And she goes, "Your music's loud." And then I said, "Yeah." And then she paused for a moment and she goes, "I don't like your music."
Kids are so honest. My son,
it was beautiful.
My son has sort of appeared in the world of my show. To last year, he got to interview Ad-Rock from Beastie Boys.
Because oh my gosh!
Grew up a huge Beastie Boys fan. I had an hour scheduled with Adam. And then I said, "Adam, at the end, do you think my son worked up 3 questions? Can he ask?" And he's like, "Yeah, absolutely." So my son got to talk to Ad-Rock. My 9-year-old daughter got to interview Will Oldham and Lori Damiano shortly after that, because if one of them gets something, the other one wants it too. Oh, he got to ask questions? I want to ask questions. I'm like, all right. So anyway, they're dialed in and they have opinions. And again, full respect to all of you. I love this record personally. I says to my son, and his friend, or they're listening to this as we're driving, I go, "Do you have any questions for Fear? I'm gonna ask them some questions. You got any questions?" And my son goes, "Yeah, why?" So
let me,
you know,
just finish on my on my comment or my answer to why, because yeah, I have to say, like, this piece was definitely, it was a challenge to document in the recording studio. It was, and it had to be perceived of like, how are people going to listen to this, and how is it going to find a listener that resonates with the material itself? And so, you know, going through that studio process, you know, I definitely had to conceive of a recording process and a mixing process that landed this record as a headphone listen, you know, so that you could really hear the details and hear the panning of voices between Tanya and Kai, and in the left and the right, and those male and female voices coming together as a single voice at times, and then pulling apart from 2 different perspectives at times. And it really ends up having to become the document process has to, you know, you have to conceive of how is this going to relate, or how is this going to land with people? And that starts to dictate what your flow is in the studio. But I have to say, I mean, we've had the opportunity to perform this piece just a handful of times, and it's a powerful experience live. Yeah. I mean, it is a powerful experience being on stage with these people. It's a powerful experience holding those tensions that we were talking about earlier and riding that and knowing when to release it and to move forward into the composition to create the release of that particular moment, and sitting inside the narrative that we've already constructed and knowing that it can change in each version of its animation. I think as a performer, it has resonated with me immensely. It's a joy to be on stage with these people, and it definitely has communicated and landed with the people in its audience. So I'm excited that the record is coming out, and it's going to give us further opportunities to stage this as well, because that's where it really comes together for me.
It's really interesting you say all this for me anyway, because earlier last night in the evening, as we were making dinner, my wife and I had your music playing, and I actually said, "I would love to see this. I can't imagine how this would be incredibly powerful to see live." And then towards the end of the night, I was going to bed and I had my AirPods in for the exact reason you suggest. I'm like, you know what? I feel like I have to listen to this with headphones. So that I'm not doing other things and I can just concentrate. And I and my wife said, "You're going to listen to that record before going to bed? Good luck." You know, like imagining the intense dreams I might be having afterwards, because it's got this intensity to it. But yes, the level of detail with headphone listening, anyone listening to this, I urge you to listen to this album on headphones, because it's really wonderful. And I want to, sorry, this took I feel like a disparaging slant at the end from my family. I apologize on our behalf. my wife and I think it's wonderful. Kai, we heard Jason say hopes and dreams for the future. I wonder if we can take a moment to talk about future plans for both of you individually and also maybe within this project. Kai, have you started contemplating any work towards Fear? New work, I mean, at this point?
Yeah, we have. Absolutely. It's just a question of coordinating our schedule so we can get together and start to work on it in a more focused way. Yeah. But there is something that is kind of at the beginning of its creative life. A text that's fairly fresh and some compositional ideas that are there. And we're trying to think of something that is primarily an audio document and that we will later adapt to performance. So to kind of take the opposite approach.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing I can say about this record is that I think that there's not an attempt to be difficult or dramatic or theatrical on this record. But I think that what that comes from is the fact that it's a really focused and compressed discussion of some of the challenging concerns that we face nowadays. And during that 44-minute piece, there's really no respite from that, right? There are moments where the vocals kind of take a back seat and the music becomes a little bit more soothing. But generally speaking, it's a really focused concentration on the challenges of the moment. So I think that sense of concentration gives it some of the difficulty and intensity that comes across, because usually we only get that in short bursts, you know, and we have distractions from it. We're able to move away from it and move back into it. So, you know, if you're committed to listening to the whole record, then I think that you will feel some of those things. Yeah.
I just want to say, like, I have been told, and I think many scientists and people who actually know things have been told, that when they convey accurate information or factual information, I should say, they're being a bit dramatic. You know, this is why we haven't acted on anything as a people, because for all the expertise or truth telling, someone comes along to undercut it by being like, you're just being either a bummer or a drama queen. And that's a really weird way of undercutting the truth. So I don't want to retract what I'm saying. By the way, I'm not even talking about the content. I was more talking about the sort of overall feeling of being overwhelmed in a sensory sense by your music and by this work. And I don't even mean dramatic or theatrical in a negative way. I just mean it gets to me the way the best cinema does, the way the best theater does, the way the best music does. I'm compelled by it. So I just want to clarify that. And I don't know if what I just said resonates with you, Kai, about this notion of like the truth sometimes sets people off and suggests that we're being, yeah, like what I said earlier, just like you're being kind of dramatic. Really? You're the ones setting up blockades about a carbon tax. You're the ones, you know, starting these protests about whatever, vaccines or whatever. You know, I think maybe you're projecting a little bit. Wow, I don't even know who I'm talking to right now. I'm projecting myself. But anyway, Kai, does anything I'm saying kind of resonate?
Yeah, the truth shall set you off. Possibly. Yeah. But yes. You know, that also brings up something. You'd asked me about my own projects for the future. One of the things that I've been working on is some writing that, it again goes back to and revisits that 2020 moment, because I did a lot of writing during that pandemic period. And the aim there is similar to the aim on this record, which is to, although the subject matter is slightly different, the aim is really to access how that moment felt. And not necessarily to talk about it, because I think there's a distinction to be made between writing about something and making the writing be the thing.
Yes.
And so there's an attempt to make the writing really be how we were thinking and feeling in certain places at certain moments during that period.
Yeah, that's cool. Kai, if people want to learn more about you and your own work on the internet, where would you like to direct them?
They can go to kai.ca.
Oh, that's it. You got kai.ca. You didn't even put your last name in there.
I got kai.ca, yeah.
Wow, good for you. Congratulations on that. Everything's going well for Kai. I don't even know how you got that. That's amazing. All right, thank you for that. Oh, and any social media? You on anything like that?
Instagram and Twitter.
Okay.
X, yeah.
No, we don't. Kai, no one calls it X. We're calling it Twitter.
No, nobody calls it X.
Jason, similar questions about your own works, and then similarly, I'm hoping you can direct people to where they can learn more about you and Fear Beyond Constellation Records. By the way, I'll hyperlink in the show notes. People can click on those things, but just so I know where to direct them. Jason, can you tell us about future plans and where people can learn more about them?
Well, I'm in a life transition right now. I moved to Quadra Island. Let's say we started this interview. It's a remote little island, and I've been building a studio here. And I'm just basically just getting up and running with my studio. So So in terms of my musical output, I'm working on an electronic record, an exclusive electronic record of sorts. And I'm producing a record by Jennifer Thiessen and Ida Toninato, viola player and baritone saxophonist. And that, I don't know when that's going to come out, but I am super happy with how that project is coming together and thrilled for the world to hear that music.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and then like, as Kai mentioned, I'm trying to get Kai to come out here and so we can get the ball rolling on this next fear journey, because we've got some seeds already planted and we'll, you know, looking forward to starting a creative process, which is kind of reverse engineering the process that we just went through, in that we're going to create something within the studio environment and then move it towards the stage after the fact. So I'm excited about kind of building those detailed sounds as a recorded element right from the outset. And seeing where that can take the composition, as opposed to being within the confinement of it having to be on stage at first. So that's kind of a long ways out there. But in general, in terms of how people can follow what I'm up to, I'm at jasonsharp.ca.
Okay.
And Instagram is jasonsharpmusic.
Okay, perfect. I appreciate that. Now, if there's a piece from Fear... from this self-titled record, sorry, if there's a piece that we can go out on, I wonder if we can settle on one together, and then depending on which track it is, maybe we can get a little context about it. I don't mean to cause any kind of debate. I'm gonna ask one of you to pick the thing and then the other to dispute the choice potentially. So I'm gonna go with Kai pick the piece, and then Jason can be like, what are you talking about? No way in hell. Or yes, great idea. Kai, can you pick a piece from this record for us to hear right now?
Sure. Part two, Mercury Looms.
Okay. Why did that come to mind?
Oh, it's sonically really dense toward the end. It increases in tempo and it drives forward.
Okay. This sounds like an ad for a car. But no, I'm just kidding. Just teasing. Jason, do you agree with this choice and its characterization?
No, I do not. That's a horrible choice, Kai. No, that's a great choice. It does actually span quite a few different aspects of the ensemble's capabilities. I believe it starts with just myself and Joe Grass on pedal steel, with a very like identifiable, soft-spoken delivery from Tanya and Kai. And then as we move into a tempo, that tempo is established by a certain amount of syllables in the phrase Mercury looms in the weather, water freezes in midsummer. And then there's improvisation in between each of those landing points. And within those improvisations, we accelerate as an ensemble and we land back on these repeated words at a faster and faster tempo. And the arc of that piece creates a real sense of urgency, which I think is characteristic of the work itself and the ensemble. So yeah. Good choice, Kai.
Right on.
I find these pieces really compelling, and lines like that one, water freezes midsummer, to be honestly a little haunting. Again, that says probably more about me than maybe someone else. I just want to say I really appreciate your work, and I appreciate this project, if you will, this band. I don't even know what to call it. That's how uncategorizable it is for me. But anyway, it's wonderful. It's called the album is called Fear, self-titled, and this is part two, Mercury Looms. Jason, Kai, I just want to thank you so much for this time and for providing insight into your work together. I hope it was enjoyable in some manner for each of you, and I wish you the best of luck in the future. And thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Vish.
A cycle of want, ache, continuity. Awake all night. The future will blink. Mercury looms in the weather. Plastic tides migrate across sunsets. Simultaneous spring interrupt, melt each other. The glacial shade depression darkens the vision. Ice and I expand in the heat. Important water with less freezes. Time midsummer bigger in the print. Or a fire is the snakes, slowly dry brush, counterintuitive, rages a inside a storm, along the coast, a moldering mercury nobody owns, up against winter, a storm, a rages inside a storm, oil paints the snow that ignites, as it drips from taps, flooding the gutter, germinates spring, in the coldest in the winter. Art the season babble and inflated cream. Plastic flooding the gutter. A spring sunset blooms in the winter. The glacial depression ice babble. Expands simultaneous.
People are trembling, I will, how can I climb, I get away? People are trembling, I will, how can I climb, I get away? People are trembling, I will, how can I climb, I get away?
Very special thanks to Kai and Jason from Fayir for being on this, the 852nd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. In the show notes, you'll see a thing that says follow Vish online. Well, if you click on that, you'll go to my link tree, and that is where you can follow me on various social media platforms like Instagram and Twitter and Blue Sky and Threads and Facebook and all those sorts of things. There's also links to various podcast players if you're unhappy with your current podcast company and want to try a different player. You know, you switch phones or whatever it is you've done. There's some options there as well, and other things as well. So that's how you can engage with me online. Also in that link tree, and also of its own, it's got its own link. It's so important. My Patreon. Please, if you can, make a flexible monthly donation to sustain me and my work. This is my only source of income, and I'm enjoying this time away from day jobs, but I'm also frightened sometimes and scared. It's all the feelings I'm having them at the time now that I can't talk. What? Anyway, your support on Patreon means a lot, and there are incentives beyond just supporting me and my work out of the goodness of your heart. There are different pay tiers, and those get you different benefits, everything from ad-free episodes and the episodes earlier than everybody else, bonus content, and then there's a tier where you can you enter a monthly random draw for prize packs and things. So yeah, there's different, there's a variety of ways. And like I say, it's monthly, it's flexible. If you start at one tier, you can go up, you can go down. Please don't go down. You can go up and or down, no pressure. Yeah, you can do whatever you like. So anyway, it's a nice and easy way to support me and my work. I greatly appreciate it. So again, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol. And thank you for even considering this during these difficult times. Also want to thank some independent businesses that helped me out here. Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. They all provide in-kind support for this show. I want to thank Jim Guthrie for lending me some music that I use on the show. You can learn more about him at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode, again, with Fear. Jason and Kai are lovely, and as I'm speaking to you, we spoke today. It's unusual for me to talk to someone and edit something and get it out so quickly, but their album's coming out. I hope you'll check it out on April 5th as I'm speaking to you. So there you go. Thanks for listening to this episode and subscribing to it and following it, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.